You're listening to a podcast from the Society of Vineyard Scholars. To find out more about the Society of Vineyard Scholars, check out our website at www.vineyardusa.org/scholars.
Following Jesus in a globalized world bears a blessing among neighbors and nations. There are three massive global trends that we face today: globalization, terrorism, and pluralism. These trends have irrevocably altered how we live, think, and communicate in the 21st century. As a consultant for Christian-Muslim relations, most of my illustrations come from my work among Muslims. However, as I hope to demonstrate, the principles described and practices suggested have relevance for all ministry in the 21st century. Missional churches already grasp the significance of many of these issues, though they may not understand their full implications. What I propose in this paper is the practical implementation of the Vineyard value of culturally relevant mission at a global level. Now, for our purposes, globalization means that the world is just a mouse click away. Perhaps the most powerful and relevant example of this is the internet search engine Google. In our Googleized world, whenever we describe who we are or what we do or why we do it, our words quickly move beyond our intended audience and enter the global marketplace of ideas. Private communication becomes public knowledge. Add to this Facebook, blogs, YouTube, Twitter, and the opportunities to communicate for good or evil are breathtaking. Here's an example that illustrates the profound challenges of living in a Googleized world. The Chicago Tribune searched a commercial online data service that supplied a directory of more than 2,600 CIA employees. One of the world's premier undercover organizations was outed by a simple online search. The writer or the article concludes, "Only recently has the CIA recognized that in the internet age, its traditional system of providing cover is fraught with holes, a discovery that is said to have horrified CIA Director Porter Goss." Now, if this happens to the CIA, how much more likely this to happen among evangelicals living in restricted access countries? Followers of Jesus in restricted access countries usually procure secure email, encrypt their computers, develop a long list of code words, and spend anxious moments thinking about the possibility of being outed as a missionary. I see two options for the future. Their anxious moments will increase, or they can start following Jesus with greater authenticity in ways more fitting for the 21st century. Timothy Tennant, president of Asbury Theological Seminary, has written about being a global preacher. He points out that today, the forces of globalization have created a new situation where there is no such thing as a mere local context. Today, every local context is informed by the larger global context. In short, whether we like it or not, we preach within the larger context of globalization. Bob Roberts, Jr., a Southern Baptist pastor of a megachurch, writes about global ministry in his innovative book, Globalization: How Followers of Jesus Engage a Flat World. Instead of putting on traditional missions conference in his church, Roberts recently hosted a global faith forum, which he called From a Conversation About Other Faiths to a Conversation with Other Faiths. He invited several religious leaders, including Muslims and Jews, to speak to his church. As a Southern Baptist, Roberts remains passionate about the Great Commission and uncompromising regarding the gospel, but he also fervently models love of neighbor, and thus he's reimagining the nature of the church's global mandate. Globalization, secondly, terrorism. For the sake of time, I'll just pass over it. We know that our generation's been marked by terrorism, and we live in a post-9/11 world, and that impacts virtually everything we do. Thirdly, pluralism. Pluralism refers to the coexistence of diverse ethnic, religious, and political backgrounds within one society. Terms like Eurabia and Londonistan highlight the influx of Muslim peoples in European societies. Same's happening in the United States. According to Deanna Eck, professor of comparative religions at Harvard, the United States has become the most religiously diverse nation on earth. In the not-too-distant past, the world was neatly divided into sending countries and mission fields. This is no longer true. Significant populations from every major bloc of unreached peoples are now living in the nations which have historically been sending countries. Of course, the nearness of the unreached world presents a wonderful opportunity to bear witness to Christ. But that same proximity produces challenges regarding the missionary's identity. In restricted access countries, many cross-cultural workers live with dual identities. They are recognized as missionaries by sending churches at home, but in their adopted homelands, they are known by the work that they do. So living with these dual identities in the globalized world often results in a kind of spiritual schizophrenia, undermining integrity and robbing workers of joy and boldness. These megatrends challenge us to live and communicate with greater wisdom and integrity. If we adjust to these trends, kingdom influence increases and opportunities for Christ multiply. I want to repeat that. If we adjust to these trends, kingdom influence increases and opportunities for Christ multiply. If we fail to adjust, our message will be misunderstood, our ministry will be hindered, and some of our messengers may be put at risk of expulsion and persecution. Perhaps a look at one particular word would illustrate the challenge of communicating and living in a world shaped by globalism, terrorism, and pluralism. Churches have become accustomed to hearing that they shouldn't use the word missionary in print for someone living in a restricted access country. But most churches, and perhaps many missionaries, misunderstand the reason why. To the evangelical church members, and initially to the missionaries themselves, this word refers to someone who is compelled by Christ's love to give up family and friends, to move to a different culture, to share the good news of Christ. But to the secular world, the word missionary refers to someone who arrogantly assumes they know better than everyone else. These missionaries are driven by fanaticism and intolerance to proselytize otherwise happy and innocent people who would be better off without all these religious conflicts being introduced. And how do Muslims understand the term missionary? Since colonialism coincided with missionary activity through Asia, the Middle East, Africa, and Latin America, Muslims understand a missionary to be someone who moves to their country to engage in brainwashing and culture-changing activities that pave the way for Western ideas, immoral lifestyles, and at times foreign governments to conquer their lands and people. Obviously, missionaries do not aspire to be arrogant, intolerant, fanatic bearers of religious conflict. They want to represent Jesus, not their home country's government, and are discouraged when they learn how they're perceived. Let me share some problems and negative consequences of some of the old paradigms of missions in this glocalized world. By the way, you notice glocal is a neologism combining local and global, and I think it's very significant for the world in which we live. Now, in light of different meanings in words like missionary, let me give you some examples that demonstrate that our words and identity can expose a lack of integrity and potentially undermine the very message we seek to bring. A friend of mine had a PhD in history. He's serving in the Middle East. He got online and Googled himself, and he was described as a missionary by the sending church. Well, he was not happy. I mean, he'd worked hard. You can't get any higher than a PhD. Working hard for a perfect identity, he quickly wrote the church, says, get this off, please. They did. But during this time, one of his Muslim friends came to him and said, you know, Abdullah says that you're a missionary. But I said, no, he's not. He's a good man. That gives you an idea of how they view this. Let me give some other negative consequences or problems. There was a team leader of a church planning effort, or I prefer to call it a gospel planning effort, in a Muslim country. He's speaking at his home church, sharing what God is doing in the Muslim world, and he was not aware that a high-level Muslim official was present even as he was speaking. Bonnie Witherell was gunned down in Lebanon. She was a nurse serving with Operation Mobilization as a relief and development worker. A few hours after her martyrdom, a journalist called the leader of her team and asked if Bonnie was engaged in proselytism. He said, no, she wasn't. She was doing relief and development. The journalist replied, that's not what your website said about you. Within 2 hours after this happening, I could give you illustration after illustration. Probably one of the best illustrations is my own experience. I was lecturing at Columbia International University on gospel planning in the Muslim world. A journalist asked to attend, and we felt this would be good. His name was Barry Dioman, and this was at Columbia International University right after 9/11. This was January 2002. This journalist had written excellent stuff about evangelicals up until this point. When he was in this class, he engaged with us. He was opening his Bible. He was a great student. But soon after this article came out, it was called The Stealth Crusade. This was the Mother Jones article. This was a magazine that in the past had no great impact. But in a globalized world, this article, The Stealth Crusade, went throughout the world. Pakistan, the UK, Iran, Canada. And then I was invited as International Director of Frontiers, this director of a mission focused on the Muslim world. Would you like to do interviews with all of these Washington Post, Christianity Today, CNN, etc.? And I said, no, thank you. I was not willing to do that. Well, one of my friends was in Pakistan when this took place. And he said, Rick, I was practicing. If they were going to ask me, I was going to say, no, I do not know Rick Love. These guys, this was struggling because this came out in the newspaper. It was everywhere. The Stealth Crusade. What was significant about this article was it said in a number of places, we want to wipe out Islam. We want to eliminate Islam. Now, I never said those things. These were the pull quotes that stood out all over the world. Muslims are reading about this. Well, fast forward. 6 years later, I'm at Yale University doing a sabbatical and postdoctoral studies, and I'm putting on a big conference called The Common Word, which was gathering high-level Muslim leaders, high-level Christian leaders from around the world to dialogue about love of God and neighbor as a basis for dialogue and future interaction with Christians and Muslims. So I was writing Prince Ghazi. He's the one who spearheaded this Common Word dialogue. I'm writing him about the program, setting things up. He writes back and he says, yes, we should do this. P.S. Are you the Rick Love of frontiers and stealth evangelism? So, you know, here I am going into this dialogue of peacemaking, and actually I should have said, well, Prince Ghazi, actually it was stealth crusade, but I didn't think that would help. So I was struggling, and I wrote back, dear Prince Ghazi, yes, I am the Rick Love of frontiers and this article. However, I was badly misquoted. You know what it's like. You've experienced the media. I said, however, ever since that time, I've been wrestling with the ethics of witness, the ethics of living out my faith in this globalized world. Prince Ghazi writes back, dear Rick, so I guess you're not the Rick Love of frontiers and the Stealth Crusade. And then this was on his email. He goes on to say, I have noticed great blessing and humility in your writing. I have read your dialogue and debate with John Piper about Allah and Christian-Muslim dialogue. And I've sensed this blessing and humility in your writing. And I say this to point out that after Mother Jones, I was very aware that whenever I speak, I have to think there's a Muslim listening. And when I wrote and responded to John Piper and interacted with these things, I wrote in such a way that I knew Muslims around the world would read it, and they did. And so we can use the media for God's glory, turn this around, but we live in a tough world. Now, I see a global interconnectedness of communication that I often like to describe as 3D. But here's a key text that I think helps us communicate in this globalized world. Conduct yourselves with wisdom towards outsiders, making the most of the opportunity. Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. In this text, Paul calls us to walk in wisdom towards those outside the church. He then describes the practical expression of wisdom in four ways. First, he urges us to make the most, of the opportunities before us. For us, that means we should assume outsiders are listening and we should communicate accordingly. In other words, in the internet age, we have greater opportunities to bear witness to Jesus. Second, Paul urges us to communicate graciously or winsomely. And he says, always. Sadly, many Christian leaders have made statements about Muslims that have been far from gracious. Third, our communication would be seasoned with salt, etc. How do we address these new global realities? I see that not only are there three major paradigm shifts where we have globalization, terrorism, and pluralism, there's also three audiences that we communicate to. In some cases, if you're only reaching the secular world, then it's 2D. But if you're with Muslims, it's 3D, because there's three audiences, Christian, secular, and Muslim. And there's at least three aspects of the ministry that we are trying to communicate through word, through deed, through our website. We have a core message worth dying for, so we better make sure that what we communicate is the core message worth dying for. And a lot of websites, at least my background in Frontiers and other groups, there's a lot of stuff up there that wasn't worth dying for. But Jesus is, so what, that we need to determine our core message. We need to have an integrated identity worth living for, and the majority of workers in restricted access countries do not have that. They have a dual identity with schizophrenia. And thirdly, we need a global mandate worth suffering for. Now, let me quickly point out this wonderful, I have 5 minutes. And in conclusion, the core message, the core mandate, and the core identity. The core message, I want you to see this. A core message means this is what we need to share anywhere, everywhere, at all times, boldly, freely. We have a core message that we need to communicate that way. We have a core identity that we need to work towards, and we need to have a core mandate that we describe. And each of these has, there's also a contextual message. In other words, notice there's an arrow from the core message to the contextual message. So we speak differently, ultimately, to Christians, Muslims, and the secular world, but it has to connect with our core message. In the midst of this, we have a core message. That core message for us, I believe, needs to be Jesus and Him crucified. And just be so bold, so clear, Jesus and Him alone. That's the message. Not Christianity, not patriotism, not our government. There's a lot of things that get mixed up in there. So I love what Paul says. I always try to maintain a clear conscience before God and all people. And that is not taking place so often today. Acts 10, 16. Oh, boy. Jesus says, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. Jesus says, we're sent out like defenseless sheep among ravenous wolves, vulnerable in danger. Of course, most of us want to be sent as wolves, actually, but we are sent as sheep. And then Jesus says, therefore, he makes two conclusions, we're to be as shrewd as a snake and innocent as a dove. The history of work among restricted access peoples is we want to be like the snake. The snake is undercover, camouflaged. But the challenge is we need to both be wise, fit in, be low profile, but also as innocent as a dove, walk with integrity, as Paul the Apostle says. In this globalized era in which we're trying to speak a core message, live out a core identity, and fulfill a global mandate, 1 Peter gives us great counsel. But in your heart, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience so that you may speak, so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander. We communicate, first of all, with gentleness and respect. Has anyone ever noticed evangelical leaders saying some things about Muslims that do not reflect gentleness and respect? It goes all over the world. Next, I want you to notice the emphasis on integrity. It says, set apart Christ as Lord in our hearts, and then it talks about speaking with a clear conscience. We have a core message worth dying for, and that's Jesus and Him crucified. We have a core identity that we need that is worth living for. We need to find that place in our lives where we can say, I am a businessman, follower of Jesus. I am an educator, follower of Jesus, with full integrity and boldness. And that is not happening in the Muslim world and in many places in restricted access countries today. Thirdly, we have a core mandate worth suffering for. I just have to point out, when you get my paper, I'm so upset at the kind of slogans, the communication we have to communicate about the Great Commission. Once I was preaching at a vineyard, and a guy came up to me and says, what are we going to do to conquer the Muslim world? Well, you can understand their heart, but the word conquer is not exactly what Jesus talked about. He talked about the mustard seed, leaven. And recently, at a very leading Southern Baptist seminary, they gave an illustration of the work of evangelism, and it actually depicts it as a total military invasion with guns and tanks and everything. And you'll get my paper. It's a website. It's grievous. That's not the way of Jesus. And we need to be very careful, very clear about our core message. It's worth dying for, a core identity worth living for, and a core mandate we're suffering for. And I argue that core mandate we're suffering for should be described as blessing all nations. I think that fits Vineyard in many ways. Now, I've got to get to application here. In light of this, and assuming you've read all my paper with full exegesis, and you've just been so touched and you're moved to tears with the robust, rigorous exegesis and cultural analysis, four things we need to do. We need to review and revise all public communication. I have a list of terms and things to propose. Rather than missions, global engagement, there's all kinds of things we can and must do. Secondly, focus on integrity and our identity. I would probably add now that we need to focus on authenticity. This is a high value in the Vineyard, and this is not happening in many cases in restricted access countries, and that's why I stepped down from my role as International Director of Frontier. So focus on integrity. Next, train workers and churches in glocal ministry, or 3D communications, another way of talking about it. It's not enough that the sent ones understand this struggle. We need our churches to be challenged and trained in this kind of work. Then there needs to be organizational changes as well. So what do I have to say now to the Society of Vineyard Scholars? What do I want you to do in light of this? What I'm challenging the Society to do is exegete and culture and retheologize. The world has changed. We need to change, and that's going to radically impact. We need to examine all things and hold fast to that which is good. In other words, be self-critical. Are these old paradigms and ways of thinking something that we hold on to or get rid of? We need to help the Vineyard serve with greater integrity and authenticity at a global level, both locally and globally. We need to help the Vineyard become more effective at holistic ministry. One reason there's schizophrenia among workers is they do not really live out holistic ministry, and we have the theology to do so with our kingdom emphasis. And lastly, help the Vineyard live out its value of culturally relevant mission in a glocalized world. Amen.
Listening to a podcast from the Society of Vineyard Scholars. To find out more about the Society of Vineyard Scholars, check out our website at www.vineyardusa.org/scholars.